G'day, everybody, and welcome to the McLeod's Daughters podcast. This is a podcast where two romance authors go episode by episode through the Aussie TV drama McLeod's Daughters. And I am here with my co-host, romance author Rachel Howe. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Jessica. Hello, everybody. I think we're going to have to change my moniker, though. Because I'm doing more contemporary fiction these days.
That's so true. You are. You're reinventing.
I'm reinventing. Still have romance, have those royal romances out there. Mm-hmm. But in 2023, I'm going to have kind of an all-female cast. Mm-hmm. Contemporary fiction. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting stuff. And I mean, that is a great segue to chatting about McLeod's because, again, like all female sort of major characters.
Right, right.
Contemporary stories. So, and similar-ish time frame. Like, I know you're looking at some stuff in sort of the late 90s. So,
yep.
Very close late, to the late 70s. Era and 70s. Yes. Yep, yep. Bit of both.
I was noticing in these two episodes, some of the cars look like they were from.
Yes. Ooh, you know, I thought that too.
middle 20th century here. Some of these were looking a little old.
They were. So to fill everyone in, we are talking today about season 2, episode 11, which is called Wildfire. And it originally aired on July 17, 2002. Rachel, would you like to sum up some of our thoughts about this episode?
Well, yes, I would love to. We decided to, you guys, today that we're going to play good cop, bad cop, because I wrote to Jessica before we got going and I said, wow, these were kind of very entertaining, compelling, interesting shows. And then she says, well, there were a couple of holes that really bothered me. And I said, well, now that we're talking about it, there's a couple of holes that bothered me and we're on the opposite spectrum. So the things that she didn't care for as much, I didn't mind. And the things that I thought, oh, I'm not watching this scene, she kind of enjoyed. So we're going to come from all sides today.
We are. This is going to be a well-rounded episode. And I feel like we're probably more on the same page with some of this episode. You guys all know that we record these in batches of two. It's the next one where I feel like more controversy is going to come up.
Yeah, we'll have more controversy there. We will.
We will. but let's dive into it. So this one is called Wildfire. Now, I started off, maybe I was in a bad mood when I watched it because my first note is I don't like the title because in Australia they're called bushfires, not wildfires. But then it took me like a few minutes of the episode to realize Wildfire is the name of Alex's horse, which they bred with Blaze to have the baby horse Phoenix. Kind of a shame they didn't continue the fire theme, but I guess it's hard to think of another fire name.
You know, I'm just going to confess right here, I completely missed that Blaze was bred with Wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot. So thank you. I feel like I have new knowledge now. This is fantastic. Anybody else out there who did not know? The host did not know.
yes. So, and it wasn't, I thought it was going to be about like a bushfire or something, but it's not, it's about the horses and that's cool. So we see at the very start, Becky's oldest brother, Mark, is back in town. And if you remember, I think this is going back to season one. There's three children in that family. Becky's the middle one. She's got a younger brother, Shawnee, who's sort of a good kid who gets pulled onto the wrong path by friends and his brother and different things. Becky's now trying to make better choices, but Mark is the one who's really, I mean, he was dumping chemicals into the water in the first one, doing some illegal things, running some kind of scam. And now he's back in town. And of course, he's always like trying to drag Sean off into his life. And so he bails up Shawnee down the street. And I mean, Rachel, we were talking about our first impressions of Mark just before. And from the instant he gets out of the car, doesn't he just look like the most slimiest, icky person? I mean, it's what they were going for. So mission accomplished.
Yeah. He gets out of the car. First of all, as an American, I'm so glad I had subtitles on because I could hardly understand a word that he said. His accent was really pretty strong for me. And I love the Australian accent, but that one was a little bit strong. I liked it too. I'm like, okay, we got a real, you know, guy from the country here. Mm-hmm. And also this is where we see the really old blue station wagon. It looked like, I'm telling you, from 1965. So, One of the things that Jessica and I discussed about Mark throughout really the almost the whole episode till the end was he's just so unlikable. There doesn't seem to be any redeeming qualities to him. Mm-hmm. And then the actor who plays Shawnee has such that look of innocence and sweetness. Like, I just wanted to slap the TV and say, get out of here. Slap, slap, slap. Leave my boy alone. He's trying to do something right with his life. And you really, I get Becky's compassion and protectiveness of Shawnee, but Mark comes out and he's just so incredibly arrogant, and maybe we're supposed to not like him, but it's almost.
It was laid on very thick.
Yeah. It was very thick, unlikable. And I think as a storyteller, you have to have at least one redeeming thing. We would have loved for him to have said something like, you know, come on, you and me, mate, we were here together when Becky left. Let's go back to old times. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get a place. You won't have to slum for the Ryans anymore, or whatever is he's the pitch that he's given Shawnee.
Yeah.
We would have liked to have seen a little bit of love or family, but he's just a big fat bully. And Shawnee's almost like, it's like his kryptonite. He can't do anything about it. He just tries to resist, but it's futile.
Yep. And see, they laid that groundwork last time we saw Mark. Like, he really had that connection with Shawnee. Shawnee said, right, to Becky, you left and Mark stayed. But we didn't see any of that here until the scene we were just talking about earlier that we at the end that we really liked. And if they had have just moved that scene to earlier in the show or given a hint of it, I felt like that it would have made the story a lot more powerful and you wouldn't have just hated Mark's guts every second of the episode.
Agreed.
He really makes fun of Sean working for Alex and says that Alex treats him badly and that it's beneath him and blah, blah, blah. And Sean kind of defends, he says he gets to work with the horses. That was an angle I really liked, actually, that it was also pretty easy. At first you like Sean here because he kind of stands up for the Ryans and he's distancing himself from his brother. Later that's going to get flipped a bit. But something that they did do well throughout it was they made Sean have a really soft heart towards the horses. And that immediately made you think, all right, this kid has got a good side to him. Sometimes it is struggling to come out, but it gave you hope for Shawnee from the very start. So
that was absolutely good. Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of horses, Tess is in the yard playing with Phoenix. Claire keeps telling her to stop hugging it so much. Metaphor, is the Phoenix a stand-in for Claire as she recovers from her broken heart? I think it kind of is at different points in these next couple episodes. And I feel like this could be a drinking game if you were binging the Cloud's Daughters of like spot the animal metaphor.
I know, they're so good with the animal metaphors. I have to give my hats off to them for that. But you know what is interesting, because I kept thinking, why is she keeping them, you know, inside the stall or whatever that thing's called.
I didn't really understand that. I don't know.
And everybody keeps saying, let them out. And I thought, why? When they're separated, I don't understand why she had the baby separated from the mother. Doesn't it have to eat from the mother?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think they're going for the metaphor of Claire has cordoned herself off. She's not going to go out into the open, you know, out in the massive dating world. And she's going to stay inside her own little stall. And she's put up a little gate between her and those that she loves, because she's not going to get hurt again. She's still recovering. So I think you're right. There's a little bit of an animal metaphor there, which McLeod's Daughters is really good at.
I'm at the point now where every time I see an animal on screen, I'm like, is there a metaphor behind this?
Right. What's going on? What am I looking for? What's beneath the surface?
Yeah. And I also wondered if it was Claire telling Tess that she needed maybe a little bit of space, but then I don't know if that was true because Tess was not smothering Claire at all in these episodes. So anywho, Then we go over to Nick, who's working now alone at Wilgul. He's loading his swag and some different tools into the ute. And we see Mark jump while Nick's back is turned, jump into the back of the ute and hide under some canvas. Now, I have several questions about this. All right, guys, I'm just going to say this is going to be me playing bad cop. Rachel, I hope you've got your good cop hat on. How did Mark, Wilgul is a very long way from town. How did Mark get out there, hide his vehicle, drive in without Nick noticing, sneak over close enough to the ute, and then time it perfectly that in the instant Nick's back was closed, he jumps into the back of the ute? Like, how was this his plan?
And how did he know there would be enough of a canvas to cover his skinny little behind? I was like, what? And Nick heard nothing. He didn't hear. I got into my husband's truck today in the back of the truck. And, you could hear me. You know what I'm saying? You could hear me. Yeah, the truck moved.
Yeah.
You could have heard him popping in. You would heard his feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Because he had to move really quick. Right. He had to move quick. So it's not like he's tiptoeing. Mm-hmm. He jumps in. He gets under the canvas. That canvas would have made a noise.
Mm-hmm.
People, come on. And then he scoots in under what? So there was a space enough for a skinny man to fit in there. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not going to give you the good cop on that. I was a little bit, but I'll tell you what, I went with it because you see this so much in television, the implausible given to us as plausible. Hey, he fit under the canvas and he managed to get in there lickety split before Nick's back was turned. Okay, I buy it.
The other thing I didn't think of till we started talking about this is like his plan. He said to Shawnee, stay away from the farmhouse. So obviously he's going to try and steal stuff from there.
Yeah.
And it seems like his plan was always to sneak up on Nick and hit him, essentially make Nick go missing, have everyone out searching for Nick. And that's how he would get the house deserted and take everything from it. How did he know Nick would stay out cold all night? Like, it's not like he tied him up to something, or Nick could have, you know, woken up after 5 minutes and walked back home.
Yeah, I was actually making a mental note when we got to that part to go, I don't know exactly why he conked him in the head.
Yeah.
What was the goal of that? To get everybody out looking.
Yeah.
But it was like maybe 2 days later. It was well into the next day.
The next day, at least. Yeah.
Well into the next day. So I was a little bit confused by that myself.
Yeah. But we're skipping ahead here. So meanwhile, so Nick's in there, you know, totally unaware of the person in the back of his ute, gone off to do some work. Sean, meanwhile, is wrangling Wildfire. He's making some progress. Alex is coaching him. Alex is firm but encouraging, and he's telling him how to, like, calm the horse and be firm and stuff. And I got the feeling that Alex was using the exact same techniques on Sean, which I loved, and I loved seeing this side of Alex. This is one of the highlights of the episode for me, because Alex is so often, like, contrasted against Nick as being the brash one, the impetuous one, blah blah, and we so rarely get to see Alex be excellent. And I think it would have been so easy to make Nick also the mentor figure, but they didn't. They gave that to Alex. And I just love this side of him.
Yeah, I really love this side of him. And I loved him just sitting on the fence, so casual, giving him instruction. It was a really good scene.
Mm-hmm. It was terrific. And at that point, Alex makes a comment that horse is worth more than a new ute.
Yes.
So that's when I started to think, ooh, something is going to happen here. But then we jump back into town and we see Terry is on a date with a lady in town who's a painter. Meg and the girls are also at the pub. Meg is miffed watching Terry on this date. I have to say, I am so happy that Meg is having to eat humble pie and watch Terry go off with other women, because when they broke up, I thought he would crawl straight back to her within 2 episodes. And I am so happy that she is having to pay for her mistakes with him.
I agree. And I like a little bit how she's handling it here, that mm-hmm. she knows that she's screwed up and this is all her doing, mm-hmm. and that he has every right to move on, even though she's disappointed about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. And then again, Jess and I have talked about this before. So many scenes and so many scenarios of the show could have been solved if somebody would have just answered a question or said something out loud. And we're going to come up to that on Terry and Meg in one of these episodes, where he says something to her. She does not respond until he's walking away. And then she kind of says it to herself. And I'm like, no, shout it at him. Why are you not telling him?
Yes.
I know, right?
Yes. So. Real conflict has to come from saying the things, not from, you know, just never saying them.
Right.
But we also see another thing there. The new local cop is giving Terry a ticket for having an old rego sticker on his car. Nowadays, we don't even have rego stickers on our cars anymore, but back then you did. And it's a really, like, what's the word? Like, he's really being mean, because Terry has the new sticker on. Technically, yeah, you are meant to take the old ones off, but lots of people still had them on. Who cares? And so you really feel like this cop has got it in for Terry. He probably knows that he has been to jail in the past. I think the recap at the start of the episode reminded us about how he, when he was younger, he had been in a brawl and the other guy had actually accidentally died and Terry had spent time in jail for manslaughter. And you feel like this cop knows about that and is probably picking on Terry. And he's just, he also just seems to be a cop that everyone kind of hates. There was one in the town that I grew up in for a while there who every, I don't know his name, but I do remember hearing that everybody hated him because he would just pick on people for frivolous things. And yeah, he was just loathed throughout town. So
yeah, he did like, seem to be a little ridiculous. And you, for sure, like what is he up to?
Petty.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back in Killarney, Brick and Sean and Alex are working. Brick seems very happy. He's whistling, but Sean, all of a sudden, after being like, after standing up for the Ryans to his brother and taking Alex's advice with the horse, Sean gets real mouthy about when they're finishing and he sasses Brick and Alex. And Alex kind of silently over Sean's head motions to Brick to watch Sean, and Sean gets really mad about it. He was happy before, and I don't understand where this sudden huge mood swing came from.
Yeah, I don't either. His brother baited him. Is it? I mean, how old is he? 15, 16 by something now?
That, yeah.
Since we have zero knowledge of passage of time, as far as we know, all of this has taken place in 3 months in the summer. I don't know. But, you know, he's a young kid, a cute kid. But you're right. Did Mark get to him that much? Why wouldn't Becky have gotten to him? Because she's the one who really stood up for him. So I don't understand that either. It was an interesting turn of events.
And because I think the scene with him working on the horse with Alex came after he'd talked to Mark and he was fine with Alex then. If the scene with Mark had been between those two, I would have gone, okay, yeah, his pride has been hurt that he's working for Alex. But because that order was switched, yeah, I was like, I don't understand why, like, does Sean have PMS? I don't know what's happening.
He's got, let's call it, TBS, teenage boy syndrome.
Teenage boy syndrome. Yeah. Then we go see Alex with his parents for the first time in a while. Alex and his parents are really getting along well. Now that Alex is back in the farm, Harry makes a comment that Alex now has a share in Killarney, and, he gives Alex the chopper to use, and he mentions how, you know, they're sort of, it seems like they're more of sort of equal partners now. One thing I didn't like about this is, again, I want Alex to be his own man. Like, his dad's giving him a stake in the farm, his dad's giving him the helicopter. I would rather see Alex earn or buy these things or make his dad an offer on the chopper or something like that, so he has, it's come about as a result something Alex has done, like he has agency. But anyway, I'm glad they're getting along.
I thought it was interesting that a stake in the farm was a helicopter. It's like giving a car. You now have a stake in the farm, a car that's eventually going to break down and you'll need to buy a new one.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like the back 40 dirt.
I'd like the back 40 acres, dad.
Yeah, that's so, it.
Or, you know, this herd of cattle over here or this crop. So that was a little weird. And plus we've already established that Alex was the pilot anyway. Alex was always flying the chopper.
Yeah.
So I'm really confused why suddenly giving him the chopper gave him a stake in the farm. But Alex seems pleased with it.
Yeah.
Now, to your point, I think it would have been better for Alex to have bought the chopper or bought some equipment and said, this is me investing in our business. And so I'm buying this, I don't know, piece of equipment that we need. I'm buying a new pump. I'm buying a new flat. We call them trailers, but you guys call them flats for the horses or something to that end.
Because floats.
Floats
for the horse.
Sorry, floats. So he's going to inherit the business, the ranch.
Yeah.
But
in like so 30 years when Harry dies, Harry's not that old.
Right. So, but him investing in it or them, you know, Harry signing over a portion of it so that he can start working it to make his own profit or something. I don't know. But that seemed like a minimal gesture to me. Yeah.
And Liz Ryan makes the comment that now all that's missing is Nick. She really wants all her family back.
Okay. Back up, mama. These are grown men.
I was gone.
I was telling Jessica, though, the actress who plays Liz Ryan looks especially pretty in this episode. She looks a little more youthful. They've done something different with her makeup and definitely with her hair. She doesn't have that, I don't know, old grandma bouffant hair that she's had in the earlier episodes. She really has a more stylish haircut, and I think she looks really pretty in all of the scenes. So well done on that end of the score for the show.
It was also lovely to see throughout this episode, Liz and Harry are on the same page and they're getting along great. And that was just right. Something I really loved.
Yeah, me too. That was good.
Mm-hmm. Harry kind of stalks off a bit when Liz says all that's missing is Nick. So he's still a bit sore about that. And then we go back to seeing Nick driving his ute alone with Mark in the back again. He gets out to open a gate or fix a fence or something. And all of a sudden, Mark cracks him across the back of the head with a tool that he's flogged out of the ute, I think. And Nick passes out from the blow. And then we go back to Sean, who's again.
Okay, wait, we got to stop here just for a quick second. He pulls up. He shifts into gear. 1-2 seconds. He gets out of the ute. He goes to the back. And he gets up some wire. Mm-hmm. Pulls back the canvas and there's no Mark.
Yeah.
Did Mark get out?
I thought the canvas only went back enough, but it stopped just before it revealed Mark. I didn't realize that Mark wasn't in.
Mark was not there. He pulls it all the way back.
So Mark is Catwoman. Is that what we're establishing here?
Mark is Catwoman. Then he gets out and now he's on the other side of the ute. And so then he cracks him up the side of the head. But I'm like, how did he get out?
How did he sneak up behind him? Like,
he has superpowers. Yeah, I would have liked for Nick to at least have turned. Like, we know something's wrong. Yeah,
heard
something
and
turned. Nick's hip is wounded, not his hearing. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can hear lizards in the trees and in the bushes when I'm on a walk. I'll go by and you'll hear a lizard through them. Through the grass or through the leaves or through the brush or whatever. So I'm like, I think he would have heard a man coming at him, but never mind.
Mm-hmm. In an uneven paddock full of long grass. Like that stuff all just makes noise. But meanwhile, Sean is again mouthing off to Brick. He says some very nasty things about Becky to the point where Brick finally is pushed too far and he takes a swing. And at first I thought that he had missed him, but then later it's said that Brick gave Sean his black eye. And so I was like, oh, actually, oh, nice. And then we go back to Meg and Jody sitting around. Meg's tweezing her eyebrows. Jody's reading
a really close-up look at Meg tweezing her eyebrows.
Yeah. And it looked like she was using eyelash curlers. I don't know if it was just a weird form of tweezers, but
I've seen tweezers like that. They actually have little handles on the end.
I have not seen them before. And she's joking about winning back your man and she looks at mom. She's like, what was your plan? You're going to wait a few months and then invite him around for apricot chicken, weren't you? And she's like, yes. and they just kind of, and she's like, I don't even think they're dating. And Jody's like, yeah, they are dating. So we're seeing it really is bothering Meg. And then we go back over to Drover's. Now, these are a couple episodes that really are not heavy on Tess and Claire. So we just see a little bit of Claire and Tess. Claire's sitting on the veranda and she's eating that Neapolitana ice cream, the one with the strawberry, the chocolate and the vanilla. Do you guys have that in America?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She's eating that. She asks how much do private detectives cost because she wants to run a background check on anyone she dates before she gets involved, before she charges in. Tess is like, love is charging in. That's insane. But Tess says it's cold tonight. She wants to give Phoenix a blanket. And Claire is like, no, you can't. It's not that bad. They'll toughen up. And this is where I wrote in all caps metaphor because that's where it clicked in my head. But again, Tess isn't really smothering Claire. So anyway.
Well, the thing that's interesting is she's sitting out there without a coat. It's not so cold that they both need a coat. That's not so cold that they both need a coat. So why would you put a blanket on a horse where it's not even freezing out? Maybe if it was freezing, like in our world, sub-zero, your world, sub-32, I guess.
Yeah.
Then you might want to put a blanket on it. But I'm like, it's probably the equivalent to of 60 degrees. Mm-hmm. So why would you do that? Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. And we go back over to Kalani. Alex is doing paperwork and complaining about it. complaining about it. Harry mentions that he doesn't know how it's set up. Obviously, Nick has done all of this. They're wanting to ask Nick how it's set up, and Liz says she can't get onto him, and she's worried. She's saying, what if he had an accident? I should drive over. Harry says, stop babying him. If he wants to make a point of doing it on its own, let him do it on its own. But then we cut to Nick, who is passed out in the paddock. He has a very nasty cut on his head. It looks like he got hit in the temple as well. And I was like, looking at this, I'm like, I mean, he was hit during the daytime and now it's night. So he has been unconscious for hours. That cut on his in his temple looks terrible. If this, again, if this was real life, this is a very serious head injury. Like he needs to be.
For real.
Like when they find him, he needs to be choppered to Adelaide, really. Or be taken. No, he does. He just needs to be choppered to Adelaide. Like I don't even think the local hospital could do that much for it. It would be a very tiny hospital. But yeah, that's not going to happen. We all know he's just going to instantly recover. But
He's fine.
Hours unconscious like that, that's a big deal.
I agree. I totally agree.
It's not good. And you do like when they're looking for him and they're like, where is he? No one can get onto him. So much stuff can go wrong on farms. And I've had friends, like one friend in particular, have a very serious injury. And everyone noticed, oh, he wasn't home for dinner and went out looking for him and found him passed out like that in the paddock. But he was choppered straight to the nearest capital city and, in fact, nearly died. And I worked at my small town newspaper and had lots of stories coming in about people being injured. And I knew one guy whose hand was sewn back on backwards because it got chopped off in the auger and they couldn't put it on the same way. So when he like saw his arm, you didn't want to stare at it, but you knew something about it was off, and it was sewn on differently to how your arm would normally. It was almost backwards, which is really like off-putting to your eyes.
Weird. How would you use it?
Yeah, it wasn't fully backwards. It was just like a bit, but yeah, it was very interesting. But just like seeing the time when they're not knowing what's happened to him and everyone's out looking, that part did feel real because you remember all those times when, you know, someone's been like, oh, someone really should have been back by now. And you remember all the stories of things that can and have gone wrong on farms. I mean, farming is Australia's most dangerous occupation, I'm pretty sure, when you look at the stats of injuries. So that part, I'm going to hand to them, was realistic. The head injury was not.
That's good.
Now we have a quick shot of Claire in the horse stalls with Phoenix, and then she gives it the exact kind of hug that she was telling Tess not to, and she discovers that she loves hugging this cute little foal, and she's not going to let her in the yard. She's going to stay here and keep hugging it.
And she kisses it,
yes. And we go back into town now. Terry and his lady friend, I missed her name. They're walking Jane. Through town together.
Jane,
the artist, I think she was. Meg like struts over to talk to Terry. It looks horrifically awkward.
Now, I have a question here.
Mm.
I thought going to town was a big fat hairy deal.
Yeah.
And now here, like every time we turn around, Terry's in town and Meg and Jody are in town.
Constantly
so
in town.
They're in town three or four times in this episode. Yeah. And I thought, and it doesn't seem like a whole lot of time has passed. So within a couple of weeks, where before it's like, oh my gosh, I got to go into town. Oh, let's make a day of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just popping into town like it's 30 minutes down the road. So I thought that was pretty.
Well, Terry
pretty
does explain
flair.
This a bit. Like when Meg is trying to flirt.
He does, yeah.
He suggests they travel in together because it's so long. And he goes, oh, actually, I stayed here last night with a friend. It wasn't worth driving all the way back to Killarney because I was waiting for a package. So that did sound like they were a fair way away. And also that really hit Meg like a ton of bricks. She was like, ooh, he's been staying with his lady friend. So,
but we do have to pause on the whole flirting thing. This was funny. So throughout the story, whenever Jody sees this woman, she notes the classic, I like you, telltale signs and flirting that a woman
Looking
would do.
Her
she touches, touches his arm, flicks her hair. And so Meg wants to talk to Terry, and this is where she finds out that he stayed in town overnight with a friend. And so she tries to flirt and he says, is there something wrong with your neck? And I just thought that was hilarious. She did look like she was in pain.
Yeah, so. It was. I was also laughing because my comment was, at any point in Terry's life, has he ever had two women fighting over him? I don't think he's quite clued into what's happening yet, but once he does, I think he'll be ecstatic, because I think this Terry is sweet, but I think this would be a first for him. And he would probably feel a little bit.
And actually, when he turns away from Meg, he gives a face like, whew, what was that?
Yes, he's so clueless.
He's clueless. He's without a clue.
Yeah. I can't blame him for never knowing what Meg's thinking, because that woman, she really is hard one to read for him. She makes it difficult. So
she does. But let's just say, to his credit, she has always been, let's just keep it cash.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kept him at arm's length. She hasn't mm-hmm. won anything more permanent. I don't know that he's pushed for it, but it's clear that he's wanted something more permanent. Mm. And then she steps outside the line and is about to go off with her ex-husband and doesn't say word one to him. And so they break up, and now he's with someone else. And I think he's of the mind that she is not into him, because mm-hmm. she was so quickly went back to her ex-husband. I would totally take that away if I was Terry. And she never wanted anything more than me staying over occasionally a couple nights a week. So
I think also, because there was a point later where Meg pretty obviously tried to win him back and he really said no. I think I just love that Terry has the self-confidence that he's like, I'm worth more than that. I deserve to be treated better than you have treated me. So I'm not just going to come back to you. And I think Terry has a lot of reasons to not be confident, because I don't think he's in the place he envisioned for his life. And the whole manslaughter and jail thing really derailed him. But he's like, no, I know my worth.
We'll talk about that when we get there, because I think that's the scene where I wish she would say something. She said it quietly after he walked away, which made zero sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's keep going with this, and we'll hit up on that later. So
cool. So Alex is now in the car driving with Sean. He's coaching him to drive and get his license. Sean has a terrible attitude, but Alex is so cheery. It's just water off a duck's back. It doesn't bother him that Sean has a shocking attitude. He's saying, come on, mate, I'm on your side, so lighten up. Who hit ya? I don't know why he's so sour. Sean obviously doesn't tell him it was Brick. And then they find Nick's ute. And I didn't understand at this point. I'm like, why is the ute? Why did Mark leave the ute there? And then I realized this isn't where I thought they would find Nick straight away, but they don't. So Mark has taken the ute and he's driven it to another spot, and then he's abandoned it and gone on foot. I also don't know.
Again, it makes no sense. Why didn't he take it back to wherever his car was?
But they find a boot. I didn't understand the significance of the boot. Nick was wearing his boot still. The car was cold. So Alex says, oh, it's been here for a long time. They go start looking. They then go back to Killarney. They get bikes. Harry's checking the roads.
And both doors are open. Why are both doors open?
Yeah. There was one both person. Doors are Mark, open. Why did he open the passenger person, door?
Why are both doors open? I don't understand any of this.
I don't understand anything about
unless
this.
He's trying to make it look like something. Maybe that's what he was trying to do. And then why would he leave evidence behind, like his boot?
And why leave the ute in an obvious spot? I guess maybe he's trying to make it look like something went wrong.
Maybe let's maybe chalk it up to that. Maybe we give him half a beret.
The girls arrive to help look. And Liz, this is another thing. I mean, motivation. I think you can boil all of my nitpicks with these episodes down to sometimes not understanding your motivation of why a character did something. I get that we want tension, but the girls arrive to help look for Nick, who we can all agree is probably, together with Alex, the most precious thing in Liz Ryan's life. Her boys, she loves them. She loves to smother them. Nick is now in danger. The girls show up to help search, and Liz hates Tess so much that she says, no, we can manage. What?
I don't understand why she hates that Tess.
No, I think she's ticked that Tess told Nick about Harry knowing about the boys on the radio and stuff, but hey, that was ages ago, and Nick's forgiven them. And she admitted that she was wrong in all that. Like, yeah, that's it. Her hatred of Tess is not justified. And particularly, I would have thought her fears for Nick would have outweighed that hate in this moment. And she would have been like, oh, she really hates Tess, but she'll even take her help in this time of crisis.
Yeah, I don't get why she hates Tess. It worked out okay. The truth was good. The truth needed to come out.
Yeah.
Come on. You guys were wrong to hide it as long as you did. Everybody's cool. And Nick was gone from Killarney long before this news came out. It's not the news that drove him to Wilgal.
That's so true. He already had Wilgal.
he already had Wilgo. So let's just move on, Miss Ryan, please.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they send the girls to the house in case Nick comes back there. They leave Sean at the Kalani house to stay by the phone, because at this point they don't have mobiles that are going to work out there. I love that the girls go to Nick's house and they say, oh, it's been trashed. And at first you think, oh, Mark has robbed it. But then they're like, oh, but that's what it always looks like. So who knows? And I laugh.
Right,
like, I love that Nick is such a slob because he's so together in most of his life. But in his house,
not so much.
Not so much. And they talk about, you know, they're like, oh, maybe he just had a big night out. Maybe he's sleeping it off under a tree. And Tess is kind of like, that doesn't sound like Nick. And you realize how worried they really are that something's gone.
And it comes out that he was down in the city and that he stayed overnight at Tess's place. Mm-hmm. He slept on the floor. And Claire says, well, that would have been good for his hip. That was funny. Mm-hmm.
I did like that. I think Claire's cluing into something there. Becky, meanwhile, is searching on horse. Brick's got the bike. They talk about, you know, the gates open and it could be day trippers. Brick tries to tell her that he had a fight with Shawnee and she won't let him finish. Again, they use this device so much. And I also didn't see what it served here, why they didn't let Brick finish telling the story, because Becky was never got mad about it. But anyway.
Okay, so explain to me what he says. Not that I had a blue, but I gave him a blue.
He says we had a blue, and then he's like, and what I mean by blue is, and then she cut him off and she's like, it's fine, it doesn't matter. So I think he was trying to confess that he'd actually physically hit him.
Right. So a blue is a fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought, but the way he said it, it almost was like I gave him a blue, and I'm like, wait, no, you had a blue. So
yeah.
Maybe I misread that. Okay.
We go back into town and the cop is giving Terry a ticket for parking too far from the curb. And they have a bit of he's like, why are you picking on me? And he says, oh, you're an ex-crim on my turf. And it just didn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, you just kind of hate that cop. Then we see Mark drives up and Sean's the only one at the house. And Mark is immediately like, oh, they're all gone. They're looking for Nick, aren't they? And he's obviously planning to steal a heap of stuff. And Sean is horrified. What have you done? No, I'm not going to help you. And Mark just insults Sean, spots the horse, is handling it wrong, scaring the horse. And so Sean steps in just to make sure the horse doesn't get hurt. He agrees to catch it and to help Mark load it and to go with him to just try and protect Wildfire.
They also want to burn the place. He wants to burn the
place. Oh, yeah,
Sean's trying to say no. He says, you're with me. We can make a difference. Let's do something special. You remember you said that to me? So still, I'm still waiting for some humanity from Mark. I'm waiting for some true brotherly love and compassion, but he's just a bully.
So mean.
He's just a bully. He's putting him down in little ways. You know, and you're Alex's little blank kicker. So you make a difference. So making a difference by stealing things and torching a house, into what? He doesn't even say what they're going to do with it. Or I got a guy who's going to take the stuff. And then he looks at the horse. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you guys are killing me with hurting animals on this show. Please do not hurt this animal. I can't take it.
Meanwhile, Liz and Harry are driving the car. Liz is really worried. Harry is trying to calm her. I liked seeing this dynamic between them. For once, he's trying to calm her down. And she starts getting mad at him. And he's like, it's like you think this is my fault. I didn't do this. And I'm like, that's fair enough. For once in his life, Harry is not the bad guy here. And that's when they spot Nick, who is stumbling around the paddock. He's woken up now, but he's very dopey, looks very hurt. But his parents run up and they've got him now. Meanwhile, Mark is driving really fast. Sean's freaking out and telling him to slow down. And then we go back to Kalani again. There's sort of a lot of sort of short, choppy scenes here. The doctor leaves. I don't know how the doctor got out. Like, the passage of time here is very unclear. They have gotten Nick from Wilgul back to the house. The doctor has been able to come. I don't know where the doctor lives. If it's from Gungahlin, I would think that's now the passage of several hours of time. I don't know why they didn't just take him into the hospital. That would have taken... same time, better service.
And Alex is up in the chopper, so I don't understand.
Yeah, they could have why they wouldn't have just put him in chopping him into the city. I would be getting that head looked at very seriously. He says that he was out cold all night.
That would be very serious.
That's very, very serious. The girls come, they check on Nick. Liz is incredibly rude to them. Tess offers to take him into the hospital. Liz is very rude again.
Yes.
And then Brick is out looking for the horse. And
we have a scene in between here. We have a scene in between here with Mark and Shawnee driving with the horse in the float and driving very, very fast. And Shawnee keeps telling him to slow down. You're going to hurt the horse. He says, I don't think, you know, if I tied him up right, he could fall over or whatever. And Mark is just being unreasonable, not listening, a complete jerk. There's just something that you just want to be like, I don't get this character. Yeah. You know, you want to believe there's something redeemable about him, which we're going to find out later. But at this point, what's your motivation, dude? What are you about? You're just...
Yeah, awful. if he's doing this for the money, why isn't he wanting to take care of the horse so that
Why is he being motivation. So reckless with this horse? Yes. Yeah,
motivation is just unclear.
Yeah, doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Brick notices the horse is missing. He runs off to tell Becky. He's instantly worried for her family because Shawnee's gone too. The Ryans are angry. They're going up in the chopper. They're ringing the cops. Harry's filthy and blaming Sean for it.
And Nick is in on this. Nick is suddenly cured. No headache, no nothing, no bandage. He was hit so hard. He was out all night, but I'm good to go look for this horse.
Yeah. Yep. Because there's a whole thing coming up. Yeah. I didn't even put that together, but that's a great point. Meanwhile, the boys have now stopped. Sean's got the horse out. He's helping it. Something's gone wrong with it. Mark's being a total jerk. And then Mark goes into the ute and pulls out a handgun, which also not common in Australia. I guess Mark is a criminal, so he's gotten it from somewhere. But and he's pointed at the horse saying he wants to punish Alex. What is Mark's problem with Alex? Did I forget some incident between him and Alex? I was
wondering, is he the reason? Did Alex catch him pouring the stuff in? Was he the reason for that? Did we forget?
I don't remember.
Listeners, if you know, please tell us. Please inform us. So, was Alex the one who caught Mark with the poisonous stuff that he was pouring into the water?
But Mark maybe got away with that anyway. Like, he didn't end up getting caught. So I don't get what he's so angry about.
Now, I just want to say that if this was an American television show and the boys are fighting with the gun, Shawnee would have gotten shot.
Difference between Australian laughing and American at him getting TV.
Shot. But I was just going to say, if this was an American show, Shawnee would have gotten shot there. Yeah.
Because Australia's gun laws came in about 5 years before then with the Port Arthur massacre. So, it would have been a lot harder to get one by then. And Sean says, I love his response. When Mark is waving his gun around at the horse, Sean stands between them and says, if you want to punish Alex, shoot Alex then. leave me with this poor, innocent horse. Just don't hurt the horse. And I had to laugh. I don't think Shawnee really did want him to shoot Alex. I think he figured Alex would be able to handle himself and that Mark would get caught in the meantime. But I do also see that I think Sean is probably one of those people who's had such bad experiences with human beings that he loves animals a lot more. And I see that a lot, especially when people are being really hurt. They're just so drawn to like the loving, kind nature of animals. And I think Sean is really one of those people with a super soft heart. And he just wants to save this horse. And the moment he stepped between the gun and the horse, I was on Team Shawnee again.
Yeah. And there is a line here with Mark in his brutal way saying, I just want you to come with me. I want it to be like it was before. Ditch the nag and let's go. And you just still don't buy it. There's just no tenderness. And I don't understand why Shawnee loses control of the horse. I don't understand why he just didn't walk the horse off, but he let go of the rope. That was a little curious to me.
Yeah. Up in the chopper, they spot them. The chopper lands. Mark has his gun. The horse bolts. Mark's pointing the gun at Alex. Alex is not really worried. And then Sean knocks Mark's hand. And Alex takes the opportunity. He tackles Mark. And I mean, the size, can we just comment here on the size difference between Alex?
Huge, huge size difference here.
Mark is a very small, weaselly looking man. Alex is a big, strong, strapping farmer. He knocks Alex straight to the ground and kind of chokes him and is like, have a go, mate. He just wants him to take a swing. And then by this point,
Mark flips on him because then Jody and Becky magically shows up. Pardon me. Becky magically show up magically. How they know where to go. And then Mark flips on him and he says, oh, all of this was Shawnee's idea. I didn't want to do it. It was Shawnee's idea.
He then sells his brother out, which then, you know, gets rid of the whole that he just wanted to be brothers. Also, we forgot about the scene where Brick runs up and tells Becky what's happening and that Shawnee's taken the horse. And Becky straight away says, it's Mark. He's back in town. We need to go. So I liked it that I was worried Shawnee would in the end get blamed for all this. And I was glad Becky was straight away in his corner. And yeah, Becky shows up. Mark says some terrible things about her and their dad and that he's dad because they notice the bruise on Shawnee's face. And Alex says something about Mark giving it to him. And Mark's like, I thought you did. And Brick's kind of like, that's what I was trying to tell you, Becky, I did. And Mark says, looks like something about like her being with someone who's abusive like their dad. And I'm like, that's a new angle. They never talked. I mean, it's not surprising given their family history, but it's not something that ever came up in the previous episodes with Becky's family. The dad just seemed to be someone who was totally checked out of life while the mum was going around making schemes and stuff. But I thought that was interesting. Becky loses her crap and Brick has to hold her back. And she starts screaming at him. And then the cops arrive and Harry says that if he has to put the horse down, he will deal with both Sean and Mark himself, which I thought was the scariest threat in the entire show.
That was funny.
Sean is just saying he's sorry. He only helped because he didn't want him to hurt Wildfire. I made a comment here that, I mean, it's part of it's probably also because you don't like this cop, but can I just say, compared to American police uniforms, Australian ones just do not look good. They do not look very,
I don't know.
A little weenie. Is that what we're saying?
They do. The sky blue. Why did we choose sky blue? It's not tough. It's not intimidating to criminals.
Start a campaign in Australia to have some intimidating looking uniform.
I think they've because this is obviously an older show. Like whenever I see cops on the street nowadays, they're not wearing that. They wear this navy blue thing that does look a lot more intimidating and just practical. Maybe they still have the sky blue for like formal occasions, but I don't usually see someone walking around wearing that nowadays. Certainly not down the street. So I think we've improved since then, but yeah, I mean, it's only one step better than like British cops. We need to lift their cap here.
With their hats.
Yeah. Oh, the hat wasn't good. And Brick gives Becky a hug. That was a cute moment between them. But now we're back on the hunt for the horse. So Alex is back up in his chopper. He spots it. It's running for the national park. Him and Nick are talking on the radio. This drove me crazy. They keep saying over. They're like, the horse is running to the national park. Over. Blah, 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 blah. Over. No farmer talking in a UHF does that. They are not sea captains.
At least they didn't say over and out.
Yeah. They would just say what they have to say. And then Alex tells him to send Terry to go and you know, stop the horse. Now, again, a sense of place and time. On the one hand,
don't know what it is.
Hours don't know what it is. How far down the road did Mark and Shawnee get? Because now a person on horseback is able to gallop from Killarney to the place where the horse is galloping towards the national park in like not long at all. Fast enough to stop them. Five minutes.
There he is.
So I don't know.
I have to tell you though, I did like this scene. Did like Alex watching, and I did like the rider coming in the way he did. It was a good angle. We're way above.
It was impressive.
It was actually impressive in wrangling the horse and slowing him down. And then we have a surprise here at the end, of course. Which
it wasn't Terry. And the whole time I was like, I don't think this is Terry. It doesn't look like Terry, but it's from a very high angle. The way they were riding was just like aggressive and impressive, and they just fly in there and they stop this horse. I was wondering, is it going to be Claire or is it going to be maybe Nick? But Nick seemed too injured. But then.
And then the rider gets off very eloquently.
Oh,
he does not stumble. He does not stumble. I just want to say he does not stumble.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So Now, Becky goes into the cop station.
Talk to the cop in the light blue shirt. Cop.
Yep. She asks about Sean. Apparently, Sean has not been charged. He comes out. Sean's attitude has now done a total 180. He now has a good attitude. He is apologetic. Alex has him. He's on his last chance. But he gives an apology to Becky. He does what Alex says. And where he's now sort of the Shawnee saw at the very start of the episode again. Now, these huge abrupt mood swings, again, they're just such huge 180s after like one event. I was struggling to fully buy it. I get that he would have had a bit of change of heart, but also didn't get why he was so dirty on Alex to start with. But yeah, they're just so moody.
Yeah.
But Mark is up on parole violations in addition to, you know, the horse theft. He's in a jail cell that's like got an outside part attached to the side of the cop station that Becky can just walk around the side of the station and walk up to him. That is not how jail cells work in Australia that I have ever observed.
I did think that was an interesting jail cell.
I used to go to the cop shop in my old hometown a lot as a reporter to go and chat to the police there. I have never seen anything that looks like that. And you certainly could not have a member of the public just walk up to someone in a jail cell where you could literally hand them anything through the bars. No, that's not how that works. But anyway.
So this isn't a kind of a, I thought this was kind of strange, but at the same time I thought, actually kind of nice. The guy gets some outside fresh air. He gets some light. If actually, if you were going to lock me up, I'd prefer to be in a cell like that.
It certainly looks nice. But at the same time,
you have no control over the prisoner. Someone could hand him a knife.
Yeah.
Someone could hand him a gun. This is,
yeah.
And this I thought, well, maybe works. maybe this is an outback kind of sort of small town jail cell, but you wouldn't see that in small town America either. So I don't, seems a little unrealistic, but obviously it's there. It must be a place that they actually filmed that was like this.
They probably just got someone to weld up some iron bars and just whack them against the side of a building and like, here we go, jail cell.
That just seems weird. Anyway, we don't know. If you guys know, let us know.
Yeah. And here's the conversation that we really enjoyed between Becky and Mark. They finally have an honest conversation and Mark brings up how Becky always was on Sean's side, always had time for him, always encouraged him. She never had time for Mark. And Becky, I mean, she was younger than Mark. She says, I was scared of you. You were, by the time I was old enough, you were already so angry at everything. And yes, I wasn't there, but you took the easy way out. And he says, you know what went on, which I'm guessing is a reference to abuse from their father. And she just says that she'll come visit him if he wants her to. And so I like
that. He says, whatever.
Yeah, he does. I like the depth that this added to the characters. I just wanted the hints of this at the start of the episode rather than the end.
Yeah, I like that it showed he's a wounded guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that they showed he really cared, but at the same time, it was almost a little too late. And then when she walks away, he throws his final dig. And I would like to note that in that scene, the close-ups were really close.
Yeah, there were a lot of
the whole thing was really close
close-ups in this episode.
they did. So,
mm-hmm. And also these revelations, while they added depth to him, they didn't explain his behavior towards Sean because he treated Sean so badly. It didn't make sense that this was what had motivated that. But anyway,
well, if you're wounded, then you try to control things.
I guess so. Yeah.
And so the result of being wounded is rebellion or rejection. And then the outgo of that is control. Mm-hmm. So you become a bully. If you have a bully in your life, you might want to pause and go, what's happened in your backstory? Because there's probably something that's hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are just bullies. So
They are. But now we jump over to a happier topic. Back at Killarney, people are saying, oh, the horse is coming back. Terry's bringing the horse back. And then someone else goes, no, Terry's off doing whatever, something else. And they're like, oh, well, who's bringing in the horse then? And they all run outside and Nick is on his horse. No one in his family has seen him ride yet. Tess is the only person who knows that he's been trying to ride. and he brings it back and everybody gets emotional and he goes to get off his horse and he falls this time and his dad catches him. He says, good to see you, son. He hugs his mum. It was all cute.
But when he got off, when he was out
getting
wildfire, he did perfectly fine. He did not fall.
Mm-hmm. Red herring. They're trying to throw us off the trail there.
They're trying to throw us off the trail.
Harry all of a sudden seems to be everything's forgiven with Nick. Now, I wonder, is this because he's just so pleased to see his son recovered sort of from the hip? You know, he's doing the things they never thought he could do, and he's just so happy about that. That is the version I am going to go with because I like it better.
Me too.
The other part of me wonders, is that just because this very valuable horse came back?
Well, that's true too. And I would like to say I do appreciate Liz Ryan. I am not a mother, so I don't know what it would feel like to have 30-ish year old children, but she acts like they're 12. You know, it's like her 12 or 15 year old came home as opposed to her grown adults. Yeah, she's just a little bit too, oh, my baby boy came home. And of course, you want your children safe at any age, but these are men. So it's just a little bit too, she's a little too mommy for me, but there you go.
I hope we dig more into that. I hope that's like acknowledged later in the show and it's something that she has to work through more. And then even Nick is like, mom, you need to take a breath.
yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then our final scene, Brick goes to pick up Becky from seeing her brother. He apologizes for hitting Sean and she's just like, ah, he deserved it. And then he's like, oh, do you want to go get Chinese? And I love that because in small towns, like the small town I grew up in, the only places that you could really go eat was the pub or the Chinese or like a tiny little shop that sold chicken and also drugs in the pizza boxes, if you were in the know. And the Chinese was the best place in the whole town. And so the fact they were going to go get Chinese, I was like, heck yes, small town food for the win. And then they have their first kiss and it was very cute. And it was a nice moment to end on.
Okay, this is where we also diverge.
This is. Rachel's now putting on her bad cop hat. Another good cop, everybody.
This continual makeout scene with just 2 feet from their faces. It was all close up and no different angle. And then just going in for another kiss and another kiss and another kiss. And I was like, fast forward. I don't know why it just did not. I love that they kissed. I knew she was going to do that. I knew she was going to walk up and kiss him. I was really excited about that. I totally love this couple. I love that they're together. I did not like the 30-second close-up makeout scene.
I didn't mind it, guys. I thought it was cute as. I'm glad that's I have one spot where I'm the good cop.
A 60-year-old talking versus a 30-year-old talking.
Oh, I was just so glad Brick's been so patient. I'm like, finally. Yes, it's very sweet. So that is the end of Wildfire. Any final sum up thoughts, Rachel?
Overall, I know we were a little bit brutal on this one. We kind of nitpicked a lot of things, but we really do enjoy this show and it's a lot of fun to talk about these things. And were Jess and I writing and directing and producing a television show, we would be subject to all of the same comments that we're making right now.
Go read our books and then slam us.
I know. Oh, right. I get slammed for, why did she do this? Why did she do that? Why did he do this? So sometimes when you're plotting a story, whether television or movie or a book or novel, you fill the holes in your own head. And with a television show, you may have a different writer on every show. And that writer may not be fully aware or understand, say, like Mark's motivation from last season, or understand, they think I'm showing why, or I'm going to show at the end of the episode why he's such a jerk. And you just don't catch in how you film things in separate segments. You know, that first initial scene, the scene last with him in that jail cell talking to Becky might have been filmed first. We don't know. And so that fills in all the holes for the producers and the writers. And then when they're filming all of the jerk scenes with Mark, they don't know that we're not caught up with that small, slight, very, very tender side of him. So, but it was a good show. I was very entertained by the show and the next one that we're going to talk about. So
Yes, I'm going to finish by listing all my favorite things about this episode, because I feel like I was a negative Nelly. So I'm going to say all my favorite things. I loved that Nick did that ride on the horse and came back triumphant. That was beautiful. Fantastic. Check. I loved that this was an episode that was really heavy on the Ryan family. We have had so much Claire and Peter drama lately, and that has been interesting, but it was a very Drover's heavy sort of series of episodes, and there wasn't much Kalani. Now we're kind of balancing that back up with a lot of Kalani stuff, and I really enjoy the dynamics of the Ryan family, and I was ready for some episodes that had a lot of the boys in it. I love the side of Alex that we saw and the way that he mentors Sean, and that Sean can have a terrible attitude and it does not bother Alex. And he's actually really well equipped, and he forgives Sean for everything he's done and takes him back again. That was all magnificent. And I loved Brick and Becky. And
check,
I love
check.
I love to see that Brick has a point where you can push him too far and he will snap. He is not perfect. He's a good guy, and they're very happy together. So
we also loved that Terry moved on.
Yes. Yes.
We do.
Watching Meg eat humble pie was great. That was also a fantastic thing.
Check, mm-hmm. check.
Okay. Well, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can look us up at McLeod's Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Rachel, you are online at rachelhauck.com. H-A-U-C-K.
Very good.
Right? Yep. And Rachel Hack on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm at Jessica Kate Running. Facebook, Instagram, website, everything. Check out Rachel's romance and contemporary works with some exciting new stuff in the pipeline. And my romances as well. And we will see you all next time. And we also want to say thank you, everybody, for being patient. We know you had to wait one extra week for this one, but hopefully you enjoyed it, and you'll be seeing us next time with episode 12, Hounded.
Please be sure to leave us your comments too. We love to hear your thoughts on this show.
Oh, yes. Thank you to the person who commented. There was a comment in this after the last episode about the size of the properties, and that I can't remember if they're referring to Wilgal or Drovers. I should look it back up. But they were mentioning how at one point in the show, they mentioned it being 30,000 hectares, I believe, which is a phenomenally huge property. And so that would indicate that, like, while perhaps these properties are next door to each other, it is not a 5-minute trip to go to each other's houses. You're still traveling quite a distance. So I thought that was an interesting insight. Thank you to that person. Cool. Well, we'll see you all next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, just wanted to say a quick thank you to composer Bobby Abbott for our theme song. If you want to check out more about him, then you can go to Bobby Abbott Music on Facebook, and that's Abbott with 2 B's and 2 T's. See you all next time.